Resonance Rewind, now approaching its second century of celebrating the wonderful worlds of television and cinematic classics from yesteryear.
Anne Todd as Mary Gordon, Pearl Argyle as Catherine Cabal, Sophie Stewart as Mrs. Cabal, Margareta Scott as Roxana, Cedric Hardwicke as Theatocopolis, Ralph Richardson as the boss, Edward Chapman as Pippa Possworthy, and Raymond Massey as John and Oswald Cabal. A top cast for 1936, and time for a Resonance Rewind into things to come.
We'll be right back. shall it be.
Well, where do we actually start with respect to the future of humanity and so on? Is there never to be an end to our progress? Will we just go on and on creating things and doing all manner of marvellous things? I think we need to give a special mention to the recently announced crew of Artemis 2, Christina Koch, Victor Glover, Reed Wiseman and Jeremy Hansen, who in many ways in the year 2023 could be living in the footsteps of the last two folk of things to come some 80 odd years later, as they are announced to actually be heading to the moon and be circumnavigating the moon, the first time that humanity has been to the moon in 50 years. Graham Harper, welcome to the wonderful world of Resonance Rewind. What did you make of a movie which apparently was screened to Stanley Kubrick by Arthur C. Clarke so that he could better understand what a serious science fiction movie was all about, and then he went on to make 2001 A Space Odyssey?
It's really, really interesting you say that. Oh, good morning. Well, good morning. Good evening, everybody. It's really interesting you say that, because when I watched the film, at the end, I said to my wife, do you know, there's something about this is like... I've forgotten what it's called.
2001.
That's exactly what I thought. It was I can see how that inspired Kubrick to make that film. It's really weird. However, I think Kubrick went on to make a most fantastic film, whereas this is fantastic for its time and its period. It is fantastic what Menzies achieved in the visuals of the film was extraordinary, or is extraordinary. It's a marvellous film to watch from that point of view. What I found disappointing was the performances, which were really hammy and over the top. Maybe Raymond Massey was, and I think he was very, very great commander and great leader of men, etc. in the film, and he has that kind of living great authoritarian kind of figure. He was splendid in it, but it was Menzies didn't know how to direct actors, I don't think.
I think he was a designer. That was probably one of the challenges. But interestingly enough, H.G. Wells, of course, whose fingerprints are very much all over this, after all, it is H.G. Wells' Things to Come. He was not a fan of the movie that Fritz Lang had produced 10 years earlier, which, of course, was Metropolis. 1926 was that. And he wanted to make something which was completely opposed to that. And I must admit, when I first saw it many years ago, I found the opening sequences quite scary and quite frightening because it was so predictive. Yes. I mean, 1936, literally 3 years before Britain goes to war and actually takes part in the second global conflagration against Germany, of course.
Yes, didn't H.G. Wells foresee it very well? I mean, he was fairly accurate in what actually happened, the kind of feel of London being blitzed, etc.
Every town, of course, standing in for London from that particular line of things, and every town went all the way up to 2036. So again, it carried with it that centenary. Interesting enough, as opposed to England winning the World Cup in 1966, we had what I can only define as a foreshadowing of the COVID disaster with the wandering sickness and indeed the rise of the chieftain, surely the person on whom Boris Johnson based his entire political career.
Hello.
Let's turn on to Jenny Bill. Jenny, your thoughts on H.G. Wells' Things to Come?
I've never seen it before, but obviously I'd heard of it. I thought it was kind of weird because it was like watching a play, and there was nothing that anyone said that wasn't profound and wasn't performed. There was no idle chit chat at any time. I've literally just finished watching it, actually, because I had to watch it in two halves, and I can't tell whether I actually liked it or not. And the ending, the very ending, which is it all of this or nothingness? I just thought it was fabulous, and that's still resonating with me a few minutes after it's finished.
Yeah, Raymond Passworthy, but we're such little creatures, poor humanity, so fragile, so weak, little animals, and if we're no more than animals, then we must snatch each little scrap of happiness and live and suffer and pass, mattering no more than all the other animals do or have done. It is this or that, all the universe or nothingness. Which shall it be, Passworthy? Which shall it be?
He was very like Lincoln. He was. You could see Lincoln performance in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, Jenny, your point about it feeling a stage play, because I would say the vast majority of actors, of course, that we see within here were theatrically trained. They would go on to have many wonderful careers, effectively, in Hollywood and beyond, on stage and screen. Ralph Richardson, of course, who plays the villainous Big Boss, makes a return next week, where he actually plays the creator of the universe, actually, in Time Bandits. So it's all interconnected on that side of things. I mean, Graham, like all of us, too young to be around when this first launched on the system. Was it something which you think kind of impacted? I mean, obviously, the BBC received pronunciation. I have a particular fondness for the child who says, how terribly funny it must have been to say a tissue, and yet actually sounding very like her late Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II, actually. Just off her sort of early lines there.
It was. I was going back to what I was saying before, Jenny, which was I found the performances really hammy, and they weren't always. I mean, not all films of that period were very hammy. I just got the feeling this director, who was brilliant in visuals, the visuals of this film for the period are stunning.
Incredible.
And the set designs, which he had a huge part in. He was it Vincent, who was Vincent Corda, I think, was the set designer with him. For all that, it was brilliant. But he just did not know how to bring all the performances down. And what you just said was really real and true, which was there were no quiet, gentle little moments.
No.
Well, there were, but they were still proclaimed. Mm. You know, when I can't remember the names of the actor and actress, but there's a moment where the husband and wife at the beginning are by their baby going, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, isn't it terrible? And it was still hammy and proclaimed as opposed to this beautiful, intimate little moment it could have been.
Sophie Stewart was the actress, Mrs. Cabal, of course, and Raymond Massey, I think, doing John Cabal there. And yeah, obviously demonstrating quite effectively the fear that parents, all parents actually have, presumably, for their children and so on, but in a way which was very, very theatrical, in a traditional theatrical manner, which I suppose is one of the reasons why the late Patrick Troughton obviously hated the theatrics, because it was all people shouting on stage.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, I don't know how long it was. It felt like 2.5-3 hours. It sags in the middle. There's a moment when you go, oh, come on, let's get a move on here, boys. But eventually it did get a move on again. I just thought, I was just astounded by the effects, which we know were not as great as they can be and are now. But in that period, with what was available and the techniques, it was stunning. And I agree with you, Alexis, the beginning, the opening, is quite terrifying. And the montage of shots of the years going by and what happened, etc., were brilliant. The way they were used, the montages, to kind of show time had gone by and war just gone on and on and on and on until nearly everybody was decimated.
This is an independent sovereign state. We don't approve of independent sovereign states. I mean, you've got the classic battle, really, between, in a sense, you might say, the Brexiteers versus, obviously, the Remainers in so many instances. I mean, again, it's interesting the way that Wells seems to foreshadow a lot of the conflicts that we actually have between those people who don't want to change, those people who want to maintain their isolation and stay in isolation, and those people who recognise that there's a wider world out there.
Yeah, it's very much. I kept thinking about Nigel Farage while I was watching it, because he's the one that wants to bring us, keep us in ancient history. I think I don't know what he doesn't seem to want to progress and move forward at all.
I was intrigued that the one thing they didn't quite get right, of course, was the notion of building down as opposed to building up, that the shock that we saw about how terribly tired people must have been walking upstairs to those skyscrapers in New York. Whereas obviously they built very much under the earth from that line of things there. I mean, Jenny, was this a future you would like to live in, bearing in mind that we are, what, some 13 years away from the 2036, when, of course, every town is established?
No, obviously, it's not a future that I would want to live with. And I thought that the whole idea of the film was a very interesting concept, but probably a little unrealistic in reality.
What, utopia?
Yeah, utopia, but it's not really utopia, is
no,
it?
No, it's not.
Well, it's not really
Westfield.
Utopia.
The whole set design in the second part of the film, which was these massive kind of commercial conglomerations, we were seeing Westfields.
Yeah, the major supermarket. With, of course, added Roman togas for added effect to decline yourself from their own aspects. Cedric Hardwick, of course, noted stage actor, of course, portrayed Theotokopoulos. And we also arguably see the first incarnation, really, of widescreen televisions, in which, of course, the power of the voice is carried throughout the world. The wire, the wars, the whole aspect is put to the fore there, and he's representing the artists, of course, who say that, you know, enough, we have had enough of this thing and shooting people into space. As I said, I deliberately thought how interesting it was that it related to the Artemis II crew of Christina Koch, Victor Glover, Reed Wiseman, and Jeremy Hansen, announced this week, of course, not just a single man and a single female, a single woman, but three men and one woman. Well, one woman should be able to coordinate the three astronauts that are actually in there. I mean, this is something which we'd argue about, obviously, since 1969, when, of course, the moon landing took place, and indeed throughout the 60s, that, you know,
or
there
did
are
it?
People. I'm not going to go there, Graham, because that could open a whole can of worms on that side of things there. But is that something which we still have that division between the arts and the sciences, and the artists would actually say we want to kind of do our thing and not be sort of constantly dealing with things getting lovelier and lovelier, as the child would say?
Oh, we've all gone quiet.
Well, it needed a sort of quiet pause there. Jenny,
yeah,
your thoughts
does.
on this prediction and the battle between the arts and sciences?
I'm not sure that there's really a battle between arts and sciences, more a battle between... There are obviously some people like change and some people don't like change. I don't necessarily that means that it's arts and sciences, it's the split. And I think that was probably something that was evident in those days in society, which is why the idea came to put that into a film. And it's something that's always going to exist, because some people want technology, they want things to move forward, and other people just want everything to stay the same. Even when they go to the supermarket and they have a freak out because they've moved the aisles around, some people don't like it.
No, I'm like that. I'm one of those. I hate it.
Sorry.
But I do like progress. I love.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I mean, I think most artists, whether they're painters, writers, sculptors, or whatever, I think most of them really love the modern progress and what you know, things that are developed and are new and exciting and opening new horizons. I think that's the whole kind of food of art, isn't it?
I wonder what H.G. Wells and Alexander Korda would have thought about the fact that some 80-odd years after their movie actually debuted, you'd have a BAFTA award-winning television director and a key ice skater, an ice skating commentator and an academic effectively shooting the breeze over a video screen from this perspective. Maybe we are actually experiencing that 21st century things to come, as opposed to simply just saying, well, that was a good movie, or not, as the case may be. Graham, you said it flagged in the middle, and I think I know where you mean. I mean, really about the time the wandering sickness started, and it seemed to wander on and meander for quite some time, and we're introduced to and a variety of other things.
I guess we got the message quite early on. And
Shoot them!
And they did. But nobody seemed to object to that. That's what I found odd. There was no... them and us fighting against the people who were shooting them. There was no humaneness. It was just get rid of them. Something like COVID, really, and Boris and the old people.
Absolutely. This was something which, again, I thought, you know, connected in so many ways, and you could actually see Boris as the boss quite easily.
You could hear him saying, shoot him.
Yeah, exactly.
I did like Ralph Richardson or Rafe Richardson's performance. It was mad, but it reminded me of Charles Laughton. Charles Laughton would have played it the same. He could have been Quasimodo, couldn't he, doing that part?
Music, of course. Carry on, Jenny.
So I was going to say, for me, the bit that I found flagged was the bit where there was a long time where you saw all the technology developing with the music, and you just see lots of things. It was, at first I thought, oh, you know, it was really interesting. And then for me, that bit went on too long. And I thought, well, okay, all right already. You know, yeah, we got the gist. Is there going to be some bit more to the storyline now?
Well, I thought it was... It was a bit like Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times, and I expected Charlie Chaplin to come on one of the conveyor belts and trying to do up a nut or whatever. I agree with you that we got the message quite early on, but the use of mats and travelling mats and model shots and whatever integrated with live action was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, stunning.
And the print, what we watched. The link you sent me, Alexis, was brilliant. It was so clean, the picture. It's stunning.
I think it has been rescued over the years because, as we're aware, Graham, the original nitrate film on which these were originally shot would have exploded and decomposed years ago. But it's one of the wonders of digitalization that it's been redressed and readdressed and repackaged so that it does actually live, which obviously gives us stuff to actually consider for Resonance Rewind as we look back through the ages and so on. Let's talk music. I mean, Graham, the march, Arthur Bliss's March for Things to Come, which is stentorian, which is ever marching forwards, marching onwards and so on. It's got echoes, I think, of Holst's Mars, the Bringer of War and the Planets. How did you find it?
I absolutely loved the music. My only comment is it almost covered every scene. That was the end. I think that's a modern trait and not one that was used very often in films. They didn't have music wall to wall, or at least that's my impression. Mm-hmm. I don't remember Gone with the Wind, for example, having music wall to wall, and yet that was a big, epic, long film. There was a lot of music in it, but I loved it. I thought it was terrific.
And Gone with the Wind, of course, only 3 years after Things to Come, 1939, and almost twice as long as Things to Come, actually. Things to Come really coming in are a little under 1 hour, 40 minutes, even though it might have seemed longer from that point of view. Jenny, what about yourself? Did you feel the music was a bit too in your face, or was it a case of, no, you appreciated it?
No, I think one of the reasons you noticed the music so much was because the music was very strong. It was really very strong music throughout the whole film. Yeah. And I actually felt that the music really suited the style of the film, and with it being in black and white, it had that sort of gritty feel to it, and the music had that sort of punchy, gritty feel to it as well, which was very, very appropriate. I felt it was kind of like a play. And then when they had the sort of scenes where you got a lot of music with all this sort of, I mean, a lot of very beautiful stuff happening as the music was going on. And I thought, oh, this is kind of like, yeah, a play where you get the sort of interlude bit where people rush on and change the sets and that sort of thing while some music's going on, and you might get it was almost like sort of dancing, you know. It was almost like the music, it was very theatrical the way that the things were done. And the cinematography obviously was stunning throughout, and the special effects. I mean, it's so hard to imagine that this is, you know, 90 years ago. And yet you didn't watch it and think, oh, that looks a bit naff, you know. You never thought that at all. It really was so well done.
There was so much movement in the camera work as well. It was big, high angle. I mean, it was really, really exotic filming. I thought it was brilliant. I actually loved the visuals, and just really hated. I didn't like the performances at all. I found them really, really jarring and over the top, to the point that I didn't really understand what they were talking about half the time.
I just, as I say, to me, it was just, I thought, oh, it's so theatrical. It's just like being at the theatre with everything was like a delivery. There was nothing that was just sort of a sort of common chit chat. But once I'd got used to that, the film being like that, and particularly the actors and actresses that were in it, that's the style of their acting anyway. I mean, I got you know, I was used to that being the style of the music, and with this sort of very dramatic music and these very dramatic deliveries in the acting, and this very dramatic black and white stark realism that's going on, it did all sort of make an ensemble. Even if I didn't necessarily enjoy it all the way through, you know, for an entertainment value, I thought as a work of art, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
It paves the way for a whole variety of other aspects, of course, and it's arguably one of the first entries in terms of British science fiction, if you exclude, obviously, the likes of Boris Karloff and Company and Frankenstein, which were obviously Hollywood productions. This was a solid entry into British science fiction. It's the third in the H.G. Wells oeuvre that we've looked at. We've looked at War of the Worlds, of course, the adaptation of that in 1953. We looked at the Time Machine, of course, 1960, which also was an adaptation of this. This was, I think, one of his first cinematic translations, and he'd actually only written it a few years earlier. So again, he was undergoing his own particular tension in terms of his views and his lines for science being the ideal way to progress mankind and to progress humanity and so on. Of course, he was proved sadly incorrect with respect to that, because in so many ways the character, the boss, who was loosely based, I believe, on Mussolini, actually, we saw with the rise of Hitler.
Loosely.
Yeah, just loosely. I think there was a. I think it was more Mussolini as opposed to Adolf or Joseph Stalin, etc. That the focus was taken on. But on the there was one other sequence which I thought was very effective, actually, and that was the early fighter plane sequence, where we actually see the Cabal character actually meet up with the enemy, and the enemy effectively sacrifices himself to actually give the girl the gas mask, and has that very bittersweet moment of realizing that, well, he might have killed her family, but at least he saved the girl.
I don't know what I thought about that. That probably actually was the most gentle and chit-chatty moment in the film, to be honest, because it was actually a nice moment, or a very tender moment, but it was odd.
And what a time to actually start testing the gas of peace. I don't think you'd actually use the gas of peace in the Ukraine today. How much easier would our lives be? We need those winds over the world. So actually send down the gas of peace.
Oh dear. Yeah, dreadful.
Well, you know, it's a way forward, I suppose, in also many ways. Apparently, the reason that the big boss effectively died was due to a heart attack. It wasn't the gas of peace that actually did for him. It was a heart attack. And he went, obviously, with those dying words, shoot, shoot them, shoot again, shoot more.
Oh, it was sad because I would like to have seen him integrated into the modern world that was coming, and that he would have a huge transition and become a most marvelous leader suddenly. But no, they got rid of
Could he have been integrated, or would he have been like the dinosaur, effectively extinct, which is what Cabal was obviously saying from that point of view? It's interesting, of course, given the clear anti-fascist approach that we took, that Cabal's grandson would be called Oswald, given the Oswald Mosley nature of brown shirts in Britain at the time, and the fact that arguably there was a sort of fascist element to the airmen with their black outfits and the way in which they would jump out of the aircraft and all the other sort of factors. But that's another line for another particular debate. Jenny, favourite characters?
Oh, I think it would have to be Cabal. And I just I can't remember, the actor's name has just escaped me, but I
Massey,
thought
Raymond
he,
Massey. Raymond Massey, yeah.
yeah, that's it. I thought he just played it perfectly because he was almost nuts, really, by the end. He seemed to, you know, when he was playing the grandson or the son or whoever it is. I mean, he was almost, you know, like maniacal, but believable, as the same person. No, I thought he was the, I thought he held the film together, actually.
So Raymond Massey gets your vote as the actor, of course, and the character John Cabal, and indeed Oswald Cabal, sort of the Cabal family. Okay, Graham, who for you actually stole the show?
No, he didn't steal the show, but I did. If there was one performance that was rather good, again, not directed, was Edward Chapman. A young Edward Chapman, who went on to become a very famous star, British star in England. But he was terrific in it. I was really surprised to see, oh, this is Edward Chapman, is about a 21-year-old. And he was wonderful in it. So I did like him. I thought he was one of the good actors in it.
Pippa Passworthy. Had you worked with Edward Chapman yourself in your career, Graham?
No, I never met him. I wish I had, because he came over as a terrific actor.
Anna Gorsi, it went from the relentless optimism that we saw initially, it's okay, it's just rumors of war, that's not going to happen, etc., to obviously the fear of the future and the challenge of where do we go now? Can we ever actually change? Maybe we all do that at some stage in our lives. We go through that whole growth pattern and so on. I think a special mention for Margaretta Scott as Roxana, of course, the wife of the boss. I think she showed some interesting acting chops in all sorts of ways, really.
I mean, to me, it was all on one level. She didn't build up to anything. It was all she I found and I couldn't I didn't quite believe her being the mole of the boss. Well, obviously she's out to get what she can get, but I found that relationship odd. I can't imagine of that period sorry, I can't say who it would have been, but she just seemed a bit too young for the boss.
Well, I wasn't sure really. Well, I don't know. Have you looked at Rupert Murdoch and his recent engagement? I know he's broken it
That's
off, but
very true. Well, that's also, yes, I was quite surprised. What's happened to his previous wife?
Well, that's Jerry Hall. That's still
She's
around and
not very
still.
quiet.
Exactly. Well, maybe you would actually. Maybe it's all to do with divorce settlements, but that's something completely different for another show entirely, which we can't even call Resonance Rewind. Just a thought, although this is never made explicit, I was wondering whether Margaretta Scott, because she actually says she still remembers books, she remembers those kind of things. I was wondering whether she might have actually been the character who was the girl who was saved by the gas attack. Because actually the ages would probably have been the same. And I was just wondering whether this was somebody who effectively there was a through line through there. I mean, I haven't seen anything to confirm that, but it just seemed to be a kind of subtext that could have been a nice link if they'd chosen to make it.
It didn't seem to help her though, did it? Because all she wanted was get what she could.
And let's also not forget Catherine Cabal, of course, played by Pearl Argyle, who, as a the long before Valentina Tereshkova became the first woman in space, she was obviously the first female astronaut as well who went off to the moon. Although I suspect that in the end they didn't just circle the moon and come back, because as far as the narrative was concerned, I think they actually just shot past the moon and continued going ever onwards.
It was a funny idea, wasn't it, to shoot? I mean, I suppose that's what you do, but a rocket going off under its own steam is one thing, but to shoot a huge cannon that flies a rocket or a capsule off to the moon just seemed hilarious to
I
me.
mean, almost as hilarious as actually using liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, and igniting them and actually getting the blast from that to propel you out of the atmosphere, really. But then again, that's our particular line, and who knows? Beware of the concussion. Beware of the concussion. The last words that Cabal is saying to the irate artists who effectively, or the rebellious people who wish to destroy the space gun, as they say.
Yes.
Well, we won't be aware of the concussion, but we will actually start looking for a score for this. So, Jenny, given that people are still recovering from the statement that you gave last week, in which Blake Seven was awarded minus 150, what's the score?
Oh, wow.
What I gave it?
Yeah.
I was being generous. I was
Yeah.
being
Jenny.
generous.
Yes. Yeah, she's not a fan of Blake Seven. Maybe it's all the theatrical actors, but I really wasn't sure where she'd go with respect to things to come. But Jenny, what is your score for this Alexander Korda, William Cameron Menzies directed incarnation of H.G. Wells, Things to Come?
I think I might give it 8 out of 10.
Wow. This is interesting. Graham, what about yourself?
Oh, I'm going to go just a little bit lower than that. I'll go 7 because I thought the overall look, the vision of the film and the concept was absolutely stunning. And I'd love to have seen it now. I'd love to have seen that sort of thing made now, because it was, although it was archaic probably to us now, it was really interesting.
I think overall, due consideration, I might actually equal Jenny's 8. I was at one stage bordering on a 9, but again, I think it does tend to flag slightly in the middle. I think as a pioneer, as a precursor, it was well put together. And again, I have to say, a huge sort of line to the notion of in the future, everything would be lovelier and lovelier, which I still think was one of the best signs ever, etc. And how people would have laughed when people said, a tissue, grandfather. Is that what they used to do when they suffered from colds and such like? quite interesting. I think she deserves a series on her own, basically. Next week, as we mentioned, we'll be back in time again. Well, back in time and space, because we'll be speaking with the joys of the Terry Gilliam-directed 1981 epic, which also stars Sir Ralph Richardson and the late David Warner as the force of evil. And that, of course, is when we start exploring with the late David Rappaport and Kevin, his child assistant, and several other fine folk, Time Bandits. Next up on Resonance Rewind. For now, to Graham Harper, to Jenny Bill, huge thanks. And let's hear more of Arthur Bliss's Things to Come March.
this. I do trailers. All kinds of trailers.
23, take two.
One day they'll put me in a film, a proper full-length job. Until then, I'm just stuck with this sort of stuff. Go and see this. Don't miss that. The most terrifying thing you ever saw is coming to babysit for you tonight.
All right, cut it there. Look, just read what's on the script, will you?
What?
The script. Other way up.
Ah. Ready?
Yes, yes.
You flock to see Brief Encounters for the special...
Close!
Close Encounters.
Close Encounters, the film.
Oh, I never saw it.
Well, forget that film. We're on about our film. Time Bandits.
The what?
Time Bandits, the one you are supposed to be promoting. Remember?
You flock to see Close Encounters for the special effects. You went to Superman to see a man fly. You went to Star Wars for the droids. You went...
Now what?
What's page two, man?
It's under page one. See? Oh,
no. You went to Star Wars for the droids. Time Bandits can offer you much, much more. It's not the special effects or flying men or droids which makes Time Bandits a unique cinematic...
Cinematic! You know, pertaining to the cinema.
Cinematic experience, it's the makeup. Yes, folks, you've never seen anything like it. Men made up to look like monsters. Monsters made up to look like men. Look-alike men made up to look different. Different men made up to look alike. No expense has been spared on the panstick. The panstick. No expense has been spared flying in the world's greatest makeup man.
Just a minute. What about the plot?
The what?
The plot. What the film is about.
Well, I haven't seen it, have I?
Haven't seen it? You're sitting there telling millions of people to go and see a film you haven't even seen.
Well, I can't see every film I do now, can I?
Oh, wonderful. Terrific. Look, give me that.
What are you doing?
Taking over. You're out. O-U-T. Finished. Kaput. Finito.
And what about the trailer?
I'll do it. Time Bandits is an awfully good film. We have worked ever so hard on it. It's a tremendous adventure story. We like it, and we're pretty sure you will. What's wrong with it? It's direct, punchy, honest.
Honest. What's that got to do with it?